On behalf of the Professional Baseball Strength and Conditioning Coaches Society, I'd like to welcome you to the PBSCCS podcast. I'm your host, Chris Messina. All right, everybody, tonight's episode of the podcast is going to be another group episode. I'm going to have the guys introduce themselves and then we'll get going. So we'll go Logan first, Nate second, name, org, position within the org, and then we'll get going, guys.
Hi, everyone. Logan Jones, strength and conditioning coach with the Chicago White Sox, going on, I guess, year seven in professional baseball, year two with the White Sox. Chris, thanks again for having us on.
My name is Nate Friedman. I'm with the Arizona Diamondbacks going into year number seven. And this year I'll be the rehab strength and conditioning coordinator.
Beautiful. First of all, congrats on the rehab spot. And hearing you guys saying year seven is like, I don't know, it just like sparked something weird in me that like, I feel like we've been talking about like together on this podcast for years. Like I can remember Logan, I think the first one we did might've been like year two or three for you and like way, way back in the day. So it's been cool to watch you guys growing up through the years. And like I said, Nate, congrats on the new gig. Logan, I know you got some things working over there with the White Sox as well. You got a good group. So I'm happy that you guys are happy. Tonight's episode, we're going to talk about blending skills and the weight room. And I think this is really kind of where the game is going pretty aggressively, in my own opinion. So I'm going to just kind of kick it off with a general thing and then we're just going to kind of see where it goes. But first and foremost, like, what are your thoughts on how strength and conditioning coaches can influence on-field performance through the weight room? Is it more strength training stuff? Is it mobility stuff? Is it working on deficits? Is it like taking advantage of strengths? Like, how do you guys view that blending in like a 30,000 foot view? And then we'll kind of zoom in from there.
Kick us off, Nate.
Yeah, so a little bit of a loaded question. I think it's a multifactorial answer. I think as we've talked about in the past, you know, strength and conditioning has evolved to be much more than just clanging and banging in the weight room and run until you're dog tired. So I think we have so many different things that fall under our umbrella, and I think it's for the betterment of our profession, the betterment of the players that we have, because there's so many different ways that we can influence their well-being and their performance on the field. So for me, first and foremost, I think it starts with leaving no stone unturned and committing to doing whatever it takes to help the player. So easy way to think of that for me is just check your ego. So I think if we're going to do all these different things and be committed to what's best for the player, I think we have to put our biases towards our specific favorite methods aside and understand that we need to look at everything as a whole, the athlete as a whole, and be committed to doing whatever it takes to help them. From there, I think basically for me, it starts with movement screens. So we need to put them on the table and assess their capacities, figure out whether it's a hardware issue or if it's a software issue. Then from there, we put them on the force plates and see what's under the hood. I like to think of the force plates as kind of like engine testing, see what they're capable of and see what their engine's capable of. So that can also help give us more information to guide how we train them. Next layer off of that would be looking at biomechanical breakdowns, looking at TrackMan and all the other data that we have available to us. And for me, this goes hand in hand with the subject of blending and collaborating with our skill coaches. So I think this is a really important time in the screening process to where we can sit down with the coaches and try to see what they see and just have a lot of cross-department dialogue to help us narrow in on, okay, we have all this data, but what does it mean and how is it relevant to what we're trying to do? Because having data for the sake of having data is overwhelming and it's paralyzing sometimes. So to be able to work with the coaches and the farm directors hand in hand and understand where everything fits and then gather a plan from there, I think that's the best route we can have now. And then going off of that, lastly, it's how do we, okay, we have all this stuff and we understand that it's a holistic approach, but how do we implement stuff? And it's by like we said, looking at the data and understanding, okay, are we building engines? Are these guys coming up from the DR, the high school signs, and we got to literally give them the horsepower that they need? Are they more polished older guys coming from college, elite prospects? And as Scott Cochran would say, are we putting spinners on the Ferraris, or do we need to make the Ferraris? So, you know, looking at different stuff, whether that be creating the capacities through mobility and stability, or using the force plates to have specific tempos to their list to give them that little competitive edge. And then lastly, sorry, I apologize for being long-winded. Lastly would be the skill acquisition and blending of specific movements. So, you know, do they have the engine? Do they have all the capacities now? Can we do stuff in the weight room to help develop patterns and sync up patterns to where they can take everything they do in the weight room and go right onto the field? So everything is as sports specific as possible. They can find, like I like to call it, finding their feels in the weight room, and then take that right out to the cage, take that right out to catch play, and make it a seamless transition. So they're not throwing or hitting to warm up. They're warming up to go hit and throw. So I, again, apologize for being long winded, but wanted to make sure that we were thorough in that answer.
Yeah, I'll chip in here. I think that Nate did an excellent job there of kind of like setting the stage, if you will. I think there's a lot of great information to unpack there, and maybe we can dive into it a little bit. But I think something that I'll add is I kind of view, like, as we're talking on what kind of ways that we can influence or potentially influence on-field performance, in my mind, I think of buckets, if you will, right? So we have like maybe a movement coordination bucket that's general in nature. We have a strength bucket that's general in nature, a power bucket, to Nate's point on building an engine, this general in nature. And then we have the skill component, which is going to be representative of on-field demands, movement patterns, et cetera. And that's going to be more of the specificity that we're looking to train or bridge the gap, if you will, from the weight room out into skill work, whether it be in the tunnel, in the bullpen, in a side session, or maybe in some cases, literally out onto the field. And I think within that fourth bucket of skill, there are a whole host of variables that kind of fit into that, in my opinion, we have some ability, more now than ever, opportunity exists in this area. And I think a lot of organizations are providing the resources, so the staffing and the funding, to make it make sense for us in our environment, much more chaotic in nature than take a high school or a collegiate environment, off-season environment, for example. But within that fourth bucket, I mean, I think of movement, coordination, acceleration, top end speed, deceleration, change of direction, rotation, balance and stability, movement and space. Like, I think all of these different characteristics or variables are trainable to an extent through some type of work that we do to increase the magnitude of transfer that we have from the weight room out onto the field.
Okay, so this is going to be an awesome talk. I can tell already. Like, you guys have opened up an enormous amount of potential for this talk. We can take it any number of ways. The one that you talked about, Nate, with just like letting your ego go, I think a lot of strength and conditioning coaches have trouble with. Like, I train west side, so athletes should train west side because they're going to get bigger, more powerful, or, you know, powerful, bigger, stronger, faster. I'm an FRC guy, so everybody does FRC. I'm a PRI, I'm, you know, whatever. And it really hinders just opening up to the athlete. And I think more so in our game, because guys bounce around different organizations, they have different training philosophies they've worked under, they go to different off-season strength coaches. Most of us are getting to that point where we're well-versed in a lot of different things. We put the athlete first and foremost, and we're really just trying to develop them. And I think maybe you guys have a different experience. Like, the baseball coaches are a little bit behind. The front office is a little bit behind, but they want to learn how to develop players, right? We're all putting the player in the center. We're all trying to make the player better. It's just, do you guys have a line that you draw of, like, you know, you go out to the bullpen and the pitching coach is like, hey, I'm the pitching coach. Like, I work on pitch design. You're in the weight room, you do this. Or has it been more of like the pitching coach comes to you, they're really curious about what you're working on, what you're seeing in your movement screens, on the force plates, like how that connects to the field, how that connects to their bullpens. I love the part that you guys talk about, you know, Nate saying that you're warming up to go throw, you're not throwing to warm up. Like, that's a big point of emphasis for us as well, is like, when you go out there, you need to be feeling at your best. So if you're throwing a 20 pitch bullpen, the first 10 aren't just trying to, you know, feel it out, like you're ready to rock, so that your bullets are just, you're just better, you know, 15 out of 20 instead of 10 out of 20 over time adds up to better quality. So like I said, I think there are a lot of strength and conditioning coaches with the way that the game is going, that they're really excited to present all of this information to coaches. We know how the body moves, we know how the body works. And there are some coaches that are really eager to learn. There are some coaches that, you know, it takes a little bit more to get it to them. And then there are some that still want to hold that line of like, listen, I'm the pitching coach, you can't influence this guy. And then it's like, okay, where do I stand? You know what I mean? Have you guys kind of run into like that type of situation? And then how do you go about, especially, let's say, especially like a front office that like, we want results now. Like, how do you go about, hey, sometimes we need like weeks to work on something, sometimes we can get it to click today. Like, how do those conversations kind of evolve? How do you go about keeping your ego out the door when there are other people in the room that may bring their ego in with them that just want to fight with you about things? Do you guys kind of understand where I'm going with this?
Yeah, totally. I think there's a couple different ways we can talk about it. But first of all, I might be pretty skewed and biased here. I think we got something really special going with the D-backs, and luckily this is we really don't have issues with this cross-departmental collaboration. And where I think that stems from is, you know, in your explanation of the question, you were saying, you know, I'm a West Side guy, I'm a PRI guy, I'm the pitching coach, and what I kept hearing was I. And I think that's where it starts. If we have a bunch of different people that work together in the same building, but their lens is through me, it's through I am this, I am that, there's no we, there's no collective in that. And I think if you have certain a mission, a vision, and certain values as an organization that everybody agrees to and everybody's committed to, then we drop the I and it's just we. What are we going to do? I'm not just the strength coach in charge of strength and conditioning. I am a player development employee, and I'm here to help develop the players. I might have a specific avenue in which I do that, but it's not just siloed off. I'm just one cog in the wheel that keeps turning that is player development. So I think it starts with that. I think it's really, you have to be fortunate and to have a really good player development department and organization from the top down, to where everybody has that concrete vision, mission, and values that we follow. And then when you do that, you're committed, as I've learned, you have to be committed to getting it right and not being right. And I think the unity is where that stems from. And if everybody's rowing the boat in the same direction like that, I think you work hand in hand every step of the way. I think there's going to be times where the pitching coach comes into the weight room and asks a question. I think there's going to be times when the strength coach sees something and it's like, hey, you know, I should be proactive and go talk to the pitching coach. Maybe I should go watch throwing program. Maybe the pitching coach should come watch the lifts or the warmups. And I think that's something that our organization does a really, really good job of. And I think to take ownership ourselves as strength coaches in our piece of this, I think we always need to realize that no matter what the situation, our field is a field of service. And no matter who we're dealing with, whether it's players, front office, pitching coaches, hitting coaches, the mindset needs to be, how can I help? If conversations aren't being had the way you want them to be had, look inward. How can I help? What am I doing or not doing that's not facilitating these conversations? How can I approach this differently to help invite them to come talk to us and create this dialogue? So again, it's we over me. And it's when something's not going the way that you think it should be going, or that you think the organization's committed to be going, look inward first before you start pointing the fingers and assigning blame, because there's always something that you can be doing that's actionable to help move the situation forward. And if you don't know, ask help, ask for help. I'm sure everybody has great teammates that they can rely on instead of just pointing the finger and you know, trying to be right.
Yeah, I mean, that's great advice. I think that'd be a great place to start for. I mean, it's obviously representative of a high functioning environment. I think if we're being honest and transparent, like all 30 organizations don't operate in that manner, right? Like, I think like all three of us have been around long enough and we have friends elsewhere. And we recognize that it's not always that way, Nate. And it also took a lot of like work to get there, right? Like time, like people investing in not only the staff, but in to then put them in the best positions to assist the player to the highest degree. But I think it takes some time, Chris. Like you mentioned, we live in a world that's very driven by results and right now and what have you done for me lately. And I think like, and we're evaluated on that, right? Like from a performance standpoint and in our environment, from also from a health outcomes standpoint, like we're evaluated on these metrics. And in some cases, like the metric is readily available, and at other times it's not. And I think that like the uncertainty involved with, hey, like we can't give you a black and white answer right now is unsettling to someone who operates in that way. But I do think that, I think Nate maybe touched on it. Like when I think, how can you address an issue such as this, where maybe there is a disconnect, like a solution that I have used and I believe in is developing a mutual understanding. So whether you think that that's a shared space, a shared experience, if that's common ground, something, right? Like we're all here, at least in theory, in efforts to achieve the same thing for the organization that's driven by the player. We're here to guide and direct and serve, not necessarily to achieve the task on our own. So I think it's a lateral sharing of information that's key. Two-way street, right? You got to be willing and ready to listen just as much, if not more, than you're willing or ready to speak in some cases. And really just seeking to understand where other people are coming from when they come at you. If it's a situation where someone's coming at you hot or accusatory or seeking information without necessarily understanding how you have to go about getting said information, I think that we have the ability to make a decision to like de-escalate a situation, find that shared mutual understanding with a front office member, with a pitching coach, a hitting coach. Maybe it's another member of staff. In some cases, a new hire that comes in with some diverse background that's not in baseball, doesn't understand this environment or have any feel. And, you know, like, I feel like that's a really difficult hurdle to navigate at times. It's like, how do we expedite the learning curve and just learning how to operate this environment? Never mind S&C. How do we operate this environment and to be successful? So those are a couple of things that I would kind of add on to what Nate said there.
Yeah, and if I may, the funny thing is, I feel like as strength and conditioning coaches, a big part of our continuing education is, you know, leadership and communication and effectively working with other people. And when I say some of the coaching staffs are behind, it's not all only just on, you know, the human movement, but it's also on connecting with others. And to your point, Logan, like somebody may come hot at you because they just don't know how to effectively communicate, but we do, and we can kind of de-escalate some of those situations. And now it's funny to see coaches taking more like leadership and communication education, like continuing education in the off season. And like, you know, I read this book about, you know, connecting with this player and this personality type. And I'm like, yeah, strength and conditioning has been doing this for like 5 to 10 years, buddy, but like, let's work together now. Now that you're here, like, let's do it. So it's sometimes it's waiting for them to catch up to us. And then when they do, it's really exciting because you're like, yes, finally, like, we get it. And I'm sure they feel the same with, you know, pitching metrics or like the blast motion metrics or like whatever they're doing in the cage. Like, now that we're going in there and we're like, oh, I can make sense of, you know, spin rates. I can make sense of, you know, the breaks on pitches. I can help you with kind of the intricacies of, you know, even like talking with one of our pitchers, just the way, you know, your hand works or the way that you can or can't grip a ball is just, it affects how the ball comes out of your hand. So like being a part of all of these conversations for me has been really cool because I love the game of baseball. And I think helping these guys to be the best baseball players in the world and be at the best at whatever that is for them, whatever their absolute ceiling is, and also raising their floor so that they're a little more consistent, like is a really cool opportunity in baseball right now. And I think we're just in this weird period that everybody's trying to like figure it out first. and trying to just be the first to do this, be the first to do that, instead of just being the best at what they do in their organization. And I think to your point, Nate, like everybody that I've ever talked to, you know, in the Diamondbacks that either is there now or has been there is like, man, our culture here is just unbelievable. Like everybody is on the same page. We connect well. It's just good people. And I think that goes a long way, and it's almost underappreciated sometimes. And that's not to say that's my experience here, because our hitting coach and I have been having these conversations since I got into the big leagues. And, you know, we go on the road and we grab coffee almost every road trip and just talk through the hitters, what we're working on, you know, very informal. And so that kind of leads me into my next question here is like, let's say you're on the same page with the staff. You have that great relationship. Everybody's put the player first. Is it, in your experiences, is it better for the hitting coach to go to you and say, I really am trying to get this guy to do a certain move in the box, but I just can't figure it out. Can you help me and look at your screens? Maybe he's not even capable of it. Or are you going with your screen data to them and saying, based on my screens, this might be his best approach to consistently making contact, consistently hitting the ball hard. He's lacking hip IR here, but he makes up with it here. Like, which way does that street work best? Or is it kind of case by case, if that makes sense?
Yeah, I think it's case by case, but as Logan was talking about it, it's really dependent on the relationship that you have with the people, the hitting coach or pitching coach that you're working with, or the department in general. I think that if the relationship's good, but it's not optimal, then it might be a little bit, there might be less toes stepped on if the coach came to you and said, hey, this is what we see. How can you affect that? I could see where if the relationship isn't optimal, to where the strength coach comes in unannounced and says, hey, this guy, we just screened him and he's got lacking back hip IR, and that's probably why he can't load his glute. It's why his exit velo is not there. It's like, there's a lot of assumptions that are made there. And I don't know that I'd feel comfortable just walking in doing that if the relationship wasn't there. But as I mentioned earlier, if the relationship is one that's solid and a two-way street, I think there is value for the strength coach to not sound any alarm bells or anything, just to see like if there's any quote unquote red flags that we might notice, just coming from a place of, hey, you know, hitting coach X, we did our movement screens and I just wanted you to know, good, bad, or indifferent, this is what we saw. These are a couple red flags that stood out to us. They could mean something, they could mean nothing, but I didn't want to not say anything and just let it go by the wayside in case you guys were pounding your head to the pavement trying to figure something out. And this could have been the missing link. So here's the information and I'm happy to talk you through it and we can do with it what we may. But I think it's always better to provide the information in a way that is more digestible and less, I don't want to say aggressive, but less sharp or pointed with maybe assumptions and lack of concrete data to back things up. So I think it stems back to, like I said, coming from a place of service, like, hey man, if I had these numbers and I didn't say anything, I'd be a bad teammate. But it's just how you communicate that needs to be effective based on the relationship that you have with the coach.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's great. I think it can work either way, to be honest. I have found greater success, I'd say, in allowing others who are seeking the information to ask. But I do believe as culture shifts, as greater awareness is developed amongst departments, a greater appreciation for what it is that every greater appreciation for the contributions of what different people, Nate, you mentioned the cog in the wheel, for what are slices of the pie, however you want to depict it. I think greater appreciation for each of those allows us to also increase the significance or the value of each one of those as well. So I think that it could probably and likely does in the highest performing environments work both ways. I think that we do need a place to start. And for me, because our emphasis, the end of the day, like our guys are here professionally to play the game of baseball, right? To win games at the major league level, win a World Series championship. To me, that is the ultimate task of each of these 30 businesses that operate as Major League Baseball clubs. Within that, now there are all these other initiatives, but I feel like because that's our end all be all, right? Like, it's an entertainment industry, but we entertain by winning baseball games and what goes into that. I do feel like that the driver of these initiatives should be, in some cases, the player themselves. But I don't feel like that we can get there unless we're taking these preliminary steps along the way to increase or strengthen relationships of skill coaches, of support staff, of front office members, of biomechanists. Like, it doesn't really matter. Some organizations have mental skills coaches. Like, I really do feel that, like, each entity are experts in their certain areas of craft, if you will, and those contributions go into the melting pot. And then that's where kind of the magic happens. It's not necessarily people taking credit for their own contributions to the whole, if you will.
If I could add one more thing too, Logan, you sparked another thought. And that's, you know, we're talking about, you know, these relationships, and there's a lot of hypotheticals. And for me, I just keep going back to, as strength coaches, I feel like we need to put a lot, like, take a lot of ownership for our actions. And, you know, let's just say that the relationship, good, bad, or indifferent, it is what it is. I think the one thing that's in our control, if we have information that we feel valuable, is to ask questions. Ask really, really good questions. Ask them to the players. Ask them to the coaches. Figure out what's going on in their minds, what they're thinking, what they're looking at. And I guarantee you that it's going to be reciprocated in some way, shape, or form. They're going to ask questions back, and then boom, before you know it, there's an avenue to layer in a thought or idea or piece of information that you have. And it's way more disarming. I think for me, I wasn't okay leaving this question without providing a solution. I didn't feel good about saying, hey, the coach, even if the relationship's not great, like, I would still wait for the coach to come to you. I think there's still ways we can try to cultivate that relationship and cultivate the coach coming to us. And I think that starts with asking really, really good questions.
Yeah, I think genuine curiosity it goes a long way. And I think in general, I think a lot of strength and conditioning coaches are just genuinely curious. And like I said, at least for me, I really do love the game of baseball. And I love watching guys compete in their natural environment. And so for me, when I have an opportunity to speak to a player, when I have an opportunity to speak to a coach and ask those questions, I don't think it ever comes off as like, oh, why is Chris hanging out in the cage and why is he asking these questions? It's like, oh, he's really curious because he wants to help us win games. He wants to help us get better. And, you know, specifically in Fenway, our cage is right underneath the dugout. And so sometimes during the games, I'll just go hang out in the cage. And we have 3 hitting coaches on staff. Our main guy is in the dugout. Usually our second guy is in the dugout. And then the other is in the cage, you know, flipping all game. You know, we have the TVs down there and everything. And so for me, I can hang out down there. I try to not be in the way as best as I can. Sometimes I'm literally just a fly on the wall, listening to the conversations, seeing what they're looking at on the iPad. And then, you know, a guy may hand me the iPad and he's like, what do you see? And sometimes I'm right, sometimes I'm wrong. And we talk about it, you know, and I think that goes a long way in the relationship building. Nate, I think you hit it right on the head there, is just asking those good questions and coming from a place of genuine curiosity and willingness to help. I think you can kind of tell when people are just lurking just to ask questions, to see what you're doing, you know, oh, why are you doing that infield drill? Why are you doing that strength training exercise versus like, hey, what's the purpose for that? Like, what are you guys looking to get out of that? I think you can tell the difference. And when it is genuine, it's usually reciprocated. And then that kind of builds and builds and builds. And then, you know, the reality is, like, if a player asks you a question or you ask a question and you give an intelligent, you know, answer back in that conversation, they tend to come to you more. And I can give you guys, you know, I always like specific examples. I think in general on podcasts, sometimes coaches talk in vague terms. Like, we had a guy that was trying to clean some things up hitting for us. He was going through it. I talk with the hitting coach. We talk about some of the stuff he's trying to do. We go into the weight room. We implement some specific drills and exercises. And then the key thing is we loop the player in. So the three of us, you know, all talk. This is the plan. This is what we're going to do. It may work. It may not work, but we're going to try this. And then we're going to audit it at the end. And if it worked, we're going to keep doing it. If not, we're going to make the adjustment because we're here to help you. And the player is like, I'm on board, man. Like, what do I got today? Comes in the weight room. Hey, what drill are we working on to help me with this? And then it's reciprocated. Hey, how does that feel for you? Do you feel good doing that? Does it feel awkward? Do you feel athletic? Do you feel strong? Do you feel powerful? Like all of these things that can kind of clue you into it's either working or not working. And it may not directly translate to the field right away. But again, like we talked about, the more that you consistently get them to feel certain things, their practice cleans up and then their practice cleans up. And then they hit that tipping point where it starts to transfer into the game. And then that's where the magic happens. And like fully honest, I don't really care. There have been times where I've been wrong, right? Like, and it's okay to be wrong. It's okay to admit you're wrong. And then you just, you know, audit it. You're very objective. Like we either got it right or we didn't. Let's make some adjustments. And I think sometimes that gets lost in the shuffle of the data collection and the screening and all of these numbers and all of these people kind of inputting is like, you have to have an endpoint where you also assess if it actually worked or not. And you can't just say, you know, well, I did my part. Like, where does that line get drawn for you guys? It's like, I did my part. I did everything I could. It's got to be somebody else. Or it's like, you know, let's keep trying something else. Let's keep trying something else. Like, where does it get to the endpoint? I don't know. And I don't know if there ever is. Like, we're always kind of on the pursuit of getting better in some way. And I think that's kind of how the game is going. And it kind of leads me to this next part here is like, how much do you involve the player? And again, this could be case to case when you're having these conversations with the coaches. Is it just the coach and I are talking, we're going to do this, the player's going to feel really good. And then all of a sudden, boom, something clicks. Or is it like, hey, I need to bring the player in because we want to try this because you probably need to clean some things up to get better. And again, it might be case by case for you guys, but that's kind of where I want to go next is like, how involved is the player in this process?
I can start us off here. I think to be blunt, I'd say the player is an integral piece of this puzzle. You could argue maybe the most important piece of the puzzle, really, to be honest, because that's kind of the you know, that's what we're here to do is to observe, right? Like we identify or observe an issue or a problem, if you will, we brainstorm ideas. There's a degree of trial and error involved and determining what avenue may be best in addressing a concern that we have. But I feel like the communication with the player generally, Chris, to your point, closes the feedback loop. So I feel like if all of our bullets are spent on problem, you know, identifying issues, problem solving, brainstorming, and maybe even in some cases implementing some drills or some techniques without fully disclosing to the player themselves why it is we're doing what we're doing. Transparent communication of, hey, there's a degree of trial and error. There's a chance. In some cases, there may be a good chance. Plan A doesn't work, right? Like, whatever we're doing right now, to be honest with you, I've got three or four different ways I feel like we could address this concern. We're going to start here. If it works, great. We may take the next step on this avenue. If it doesn't, guess what? I have a really nice plan B or plan C, for example. I feel like for us to neglect or to leave out the player themselves would be a huge disservice to not only the player, but to our organization and whatever it is that we're trying to achieve, whether it's something, an initiative with that specific player, take Nate working in a rehab type environment, if it's a return to play, something or another, or if it's something that we're looking to roll out more holistically. You know, whether it's something that we're putting at the back end of a movement prep in the weight room to help prepare them for the demands of a workout or game. I feel like a lack of communication to the player themselves and also communicating to them that it's expected that they come to you with feedback as well. Like, we want to hear how things are going for you is maybe arguably the most important component to all of these, maybe all the things that we've talked on today, in my opinion.
Yeah, I think Logan crushed it with that. And to go off your last point, I think it's super important that the players have a space to have freedom within the program or the plan that's designed to help them. I think, you know, that's one of the things I always say anytime I'm working with a guy, whether it's, you know, skill specific, or even if it's just traditional S&C, a traditional lift, you know, I always say, like, hey, if there's something that you don't like or doesn't feel good, please communicate it. Because I think a lot of these guys, especially, you know, if we try to be good people as strength coaches and build good relationships, more times than not, these guys are going to like us. And I think sometimes because they do like us, they refrain from telling us when things don't feel great or it's not their favorite exercise. And I make sure that I tell them, look at, man, we're trying to do what's best for you. So if there's something that's not working, please tell me. And we have, like Logan said, a million other things that we can do. So I appreciate you being respectful, but let's do what's best for you. And I think, you know, in terms of the plan for the player, it's like you said, Chris, it is kind of case dependent. You have some guys that, you know, great relationship. You walk in with a plan, say, hey, you know, pitching coach and I talked, this is what we got. We feel it's going to be good. They're already in hook, line, and sinker. I'll do what you got. Let's roll. Then you have other guys that might be a little bit more resistant, different personality. Maybe it's an approach where, you know, if you're talking with the hitting coach or pitching coach, it's a little bit of hide the medicine. Like, they do anything you tell them, but they're not super, they don't like to think about too much. They don't want to, you know, get all domed up. So maybe it's a thing where, hey, in their lift that you write up for them, you sneak a couple things in, just see what happens, see if it makes an impact. But more times than not, like Logan said, I really think on the front end, you need to be really have a lot of conversations beforehand with the hitting or the pitching coach to make sure that the plan you bring to the player is a polished one, an adaptable and malleable one, but polished. So it doesn't look like you guys are caught off guard when the player has questions. But as the final piece of it, like Logan was saying, I think the player does need to have input, feedback, and input into the program. Because if they have input, they feel like they're heard, and now they feel like they are a part of their development, and there's going to be more ownership and more buy-in in the program. If they have no say or they're not able to give feedback, when crap hits the fan, they're out. Like, they have no ownership of it. It wasn't their plan. You know, you could really have just cause to say, hey, I'm not doing that. Like, I trusted you guys, but it's not working. So I think as much as you can involve the player in the plan to create that ownership, create that buy-in, I think, like Logan said, it's probably the most important piece.
All right, everybody, that's going to conclude part one of this interview with Logan and Nate. This is going to be a really good interview with a lot of good information, both philosophical and applicable. And I think this is a really good introduction to the remainder of the interview with these two. So be sure to be on the lookout for the remainder of the interview, and be sure to bring a pen and paper because there's a ton of notes to take. Three things that I took from the guys in this episode: collecting data for the sake of collecting data is overwhelming and underproductive. Figure out what others are thinking by asking really good questions, and involving the player in the process is a key part of achieving success. With that being said, I hope you enjoyed this episode, and we'll talk to you again on the next one.